Welcome to the Zulu Time podcast, a straight talking conversation between two watch enthusiasts about the world of military watches. I hope you enjoy.
Hello, and welcome to episode 85 of the Zulu Time podcast with your host Dan from Timely _ Moments. Guys, I hope you've had a good November. I hope that your Remembrance Day period and your Veterans Day, Memorial Day period went really well and all that kind of stuff. I've seen a lot of posts since my last episode came up, which was quite nice to see everyone getting involved with donations to the Royal British Legion and all that kind of stuff. If you haven't checked that episode out, please go and check it out. It's an episode with Justin over at the Recon Team Watch blog, where we talk about the difference between Remembrance in Britain and Remembrance in America, effectively. So if you haven't listened to that, I implore you to go and listen to that and go and give Justin's blog a follow. Today is another interview episode. I've managed to get an interesting guest, a guest I didn't actually think I'd actually get onto the show, mainly because we've had a few calendar amendments over the last couple of weeks and trying to nail down the time for us to record together. Because unfortunately, guys, my real work kind of got in the way. I was on a course and then I had a few taskings out to do some media stuff that just kind of got in the way of our original time to record. But we finally managed to do it. And without further ado, Stu, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Glad to have a chat, talk about things.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So, Stu, this is your second podcast, if I'm correct.
That's right, second one.
So you recorded with the Rico's Watches podcast. How long ago was that now? A couple of months ago, I believe?
About 6 or 8 weeks ago, I think it was. Yeah. It was nice, and it's nice to make new acquaintances and and just chat about things that we're all into, you know?
No, I'm looking forward to it. So, guys, if you haven't realised who Stu is, because I'm terrible at introductions, it seems, Stu is the owner, proprietor, founder of Hawk Rigger, and they make some fantastic tool watch straps, is what I would say, and tool watch accessories, and is an independent-owned business, effectively. So we're going to bring him on to obviously talk about everything Hawk Rigger. But before we get into Hawk Rigger and talk about straps, Stu, I want to obviously start the podcast with one of its two traditions, which is the wristwatch check. So what watch do you have on your wrist today?
Okay, so today I've got a Unimatic U1, and I've had it for about a month. It was my first 22 millimeter watch because I'm by no means a watch expert. I consider myself a strap expert. But loving it. It's like I say, it's only about 4 or 6 weeks old. I bought it secondhand, but it's in perfect mint condition and just enjoying it.
Nice. They look really cool. They're quite stark, plain dials, aren't they? They've got like very subdued but very legible dials from what I've seen.
Very nice. It's very nice. I mean, I believe it's made in Italy, and the guys that made it are industrial designers, and you can kind of see that coming into the look and the feel of the watch. So I appreciate the design aspects. Very simple, clear, clean kind of finish on the watch. So yeah, just enjoying it.
Yeah, they look really cool. Every time I've seen them, I've seen that Unimatic have done a few limited editions and collaborations in the past as well. Like, I believe they did a NASA one that kind of like was white, which was quite cool. And I know they did a very widely advertised drop with Hodinkee. I think it was last year, and that sold out pretty much immediately. But I like the symmetry on the dials. They're quite balanced and very, like you said, very tool watchy, aren't they? Like you said, they're very industrial and very simple designs, which obviously lends well to my audience, obviously being military, ex-military, law enforcement and all that kind of stuff, or just guys into tool watches. I assume it's obviously on the Hawk Rigger strap.
It's on the Riverine Mill strap, which is a new range of straps that I'm doing, the Mill straps. And what they are is they incorporate Cordura laminate, which is often used on like Molly and Pal's gear, you know. So you can bring in the multicam, Ranger green, black, a lot of different kind of accents on the straps. So they basically are sewn in and hold the buckle set in place. And then I've got on a kind of military styled nylon webbing based off parachute webbing. Nice. So it's got a really nice looking feel to it. This one's Coyote with the multicam, 316 stainless hardware. It's pretty sweet. I like it anyway.
It's nice. I actually have a one of your straps very similar to the Riverine. I believe it's the Calypso, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, Calypso.
I believe that's it's right. The Calypso because it's got the slightly bigger buckle with the multicam in Coyote. I was meant to, I'll be honest, I because of where I finished work yesterday and where I'm recording, guys, just so you're aware, the Zulu Time podcast is mobile. I'm technically on there's no technique about it. I'm in a different location to where I'd normally record, which is not in Timely Moments headquarters, as it were, which is my room in the block. I'm recording elsewhere. And because of that, I haven't got my watch on, which I was meant to wear for this episode. So I'm going to give you two watches, right? So I'm going to give you the watch that I'm wearing on my wrist and the watch I was meant to wear on my wrist. So I was meant to have worn my Elliot Brown Tynum DLC limited edition. It's limited edition because it's got a see-through case back. Everything else to that watch is standard as the normal Tynum in DLC. But I wear that watch on my Hawkrigger strap because it's just a really cool tool watch. So that's what I was meant to have worn. But obviously, because of work and life getting in the way and where I'm now recording, I'm wearing my Elliot Brown Holton, which unfortunately is on its bracelet today. However, I have worn all of my Elliot Browns fit very well on your Hawkrigger strap because it's just the way it works. You make great straps. And like you said, with the 22 mil laminate and stuff like that, for me, it was just it wears really low on quite fairly chunky cased watches. And I'm showing my watch off to Stu now, not that you guys can see it, but those who own an Elliot Brown will know that the depth of the case is quite high for what they are, which obviously aids for it being a tool watch. But I find, Sue, with your Hawkrigger strap, the one that I've got, it because it's a two-piece, it doesn't obviously sit underneath the case, which means I can obviously have a lower profile for a fairly high watch. And the Tynum is quite a high watch for its size. And I just think it just aids to, obviously, the wearing ability of that case. But also, because it's a two-piece strap, I can show off the display case back as well, which is
really nice. Yes, that's really nice. Yeah, the two pieces, like, always shocks me because I normally wear the one-piece ones. When I put on one of my two pieces, I'm always amazed how flipping comfortable it is.
Uh-huh.
They just sit like glue, and you forget you've got a watch on your wrist, basically. But yeah, no, they're really, really comfortable. So I'm really happy with how they turned out, and just a great way to incorporate the Cordura laminate into it as well. Uh-huh. Which has opened a whole new kind of scope for me with Hawkrigger and the two-piece straps, because now I can do 18 mil, I can do 20 mil, I can do 21, I can do 24, right up to 26, mm-hmm. because of the end parts being those Cordura laminate kind of end tabs.
Yep.
So it's created a heck of a lot of versatility without me having to go out there and buy kilometers of webbing, you know, in all different sizes, you know, and also things like 18 mil that aren't as popular or as common. It means I can service those clients, which is great.
Yeah, you say that 18 mil is not popular, but I'm telling you now, right? So I'm looking ahead now in terms of 2024 and obviously my next episodes, which are going to come out after this one airs. But I always do a Christmas roundup episode, right, Stu, right, where we look at the year before in watches and we look at our hopes and predictions for next year. And I think that actually smaller watches might come back into fashion. And I think you never know. You might just get a little bit more orders on the 18 mil side, you know.
I'm actually getting quite a few.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm actually getting quite a few down. It's actually surprising me how many people are now enjoying these two-piece straps and going for also the 21 as well.
Yeah.
Is becoming popular, which is nice. It's good.
Yeah, I think as well, 21 mils with the advent of, you know, the new like the Tudor FXDs, the Tudor Pelagos and stuff like that, where the latest Tudor cases have all taken an inspiration from its bigger brother Rolex with the 21 mil lugs. I think that's why, you know, it's aided you, hasn't it, in terms of orders at that size. Before we speak everything about straps, though, Stu, You say you're not a watch expert, but clearly you were into watches before you started, or you must have had an inkling into, oh, I like a watch, you know what I mean? So let's talk about what got you into watches, or loosely into watches, and some of the standout watches that are in your personal collection.
Okay. Well, I would say I've always been into like the everyday carry kind of EDC stuff. I've got like a stash of like folding knives and fixed blades and all this sort of thing. The belts, when I started, that was an extension of that as well. So the watches and the watch straps just became like a no-brainer, really. As you start to get into this kind of like community and you're showing an interest in things, you know, it kind of expands exponentially. But actually, watches basically grew out of the other things that I've been doing. And I actually didn't think that I was going to be really into watches until I started. And then you probably know yourself, because once you start, you don't stop. So I've gone from just basically making the watch straps because I made the belts, to buying a watch because if I'm going to make watch straps, I better get a watch and find out what I'm doing. And now I've got like six watches. And every time I see a new one, I'm, oh yeah, I'm going to get that one as well, you know. So yeah, I'm becoming addicted. I just bought the new Tudor FXD Black. I'm in love with it. And yeah, absolutely amazing. And what I really appreciate, Dan, is the workmanship, the craftsmanship, the detail. It's basically, we're dealing with perfection when we're dealing with watches, because is anything, you know, in this kind of area engineered as well as these things. So the challenge for me is to put watch straps together that they're going to fit with these timepieces, which really are quite amazing in terms of detail and finish.
Yeah, no, they are. And I think, like I said, I can draw some comparisons there. You know, you talk about, you know, very well engineered tools, you know, attention to detail, and effectively hitting as near as damn it to perfection that you can. I would say that, you know, for those of you who haven't experienced one of Stu's straps, obviously we're plugging him a little bit, please go and follow him and have a look at what he has. But if you do commit to a purchase with Stu, the product that you get out the back of that purchase is effectively a perfect strap. You know, it's a perfect tool watch strap. That will pair very well with whatever watch that you decide to put it on, you know. And I can see that similarity in terms of your mindset, Stu, and what you create and what you make, and pairing it to obviously what it goes with. So that's just my own opinion and my point of view, but I can see why that there's that connection there, not just with watches and EDC, but, you know, that attention to detail is something that even, you know, your products definitely hold with, obviously, and complement what they go with.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I do this not just as a business, I do it because I love it. Mm-hmm. And putting, you know, creating products, creating something out of nothing is so rewarding. And like, you know, starting out on this journey, you start with nothing and you start developing a product, and you'd never stop developing those products. And for me, like I always say to my wife, this has got to be a real product, you know, not this homemade thing that some guy is just, you know, kind of slapping together. And I really try and get the branding right, get the fit and the finish and the feel of these straps right. So it's always a work in progress. But I feel I've been doing it since 2019 with the watch straps, and yeah, since 2015 with the belts. Mm-hmm. A lot of the watch straps have grown out of the belt designs and the specific aspects of the buckles themselves, that I had to learn so much about buckles. Mm-hmm. What I've done now is I've downsized that into watch straps. But if I have any expertise that I've kind of built over the past 8 years or so, it would be understanding buckles and the tolerances and all this sort of thing. So that's why we've got so much scope, so many different types of buckles on the straps. It gives us a lot of variety and we can meet a lot of needs that way.
Yeah. So going into the Hawkrigger range then, so you started with belts, and you've effectively, like you said, you've understood that process. You've downscaled in physical size to watches. And obviously you've come out with these different range of watch straps, and you've, like you said, you've constantly reiterated, now not just reiterated in colors, obviously, because obviously we're watch nerds, we like to match our watches with different colors and all that kind of stuff, but you've reiterated in, like you said, in buckle types, in closure types, in is it a one piece strap, is it a two piece strap, and all these kind of stuff. And you've taken inspiration from, you know, for example, one of my favorite watches, watch straps that you've done is the one that's based off the static line, you know, pull for a parachute. So that's an inspiration there. You've, like you said, you've got the Huey O-Rig straps, and now you've brought in like elasticated straps as well. In terms of your process, right, chronologically, what was the first watch strap, you know, and, you know, what design elements have you taken from that? And that have now gone all the way through your other ones, if that makes sense.
Okay. So the first ones were actually the elastic straps. And it was the rigger band. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, look, I had a client who used to buy a lot of belts off me, and he was always saying, you've got to make watch straps. And I was like, oh, gee, where's watch straps? And eventually, like, it was sitting in the back of my mind all the time. So I saw the typical Marine Nationale watch straps. I liked them. I liked the backstory. I liked the innovation. I was already making riggers belts, which kind of grew out of, you know, the riggers in the US working with spare parts from, you know, decommissioned parachutes and making belts out of them. So the MN Marine Nationale style strap, mm-hmm. I thought, wow, I love that. I love the backstory. I love what they are. I love the way they look. They're great. Right. In the niche that I basically, you know, feel that I belong in, but the buckle was the thing, and I kind of thought to myself, I don't want to just copy what everybody else is doing. I've got to try and come up with something original. And it took me a long time to actually figure a different way of doing what I wanted to do with an elastic strap. And it was a bit of a eureka moment. But again, with Hawkrigger, what I do is I kind of innovate. I wouldn't say necessarily invent, but innovate. So I look back at things that pre-existed and maybe been used in a different way. And I came across I think it was a pilot's chin strap from like a helicopter or a jump jet or something like that. And it had this little buckle with like a frame and a slot and a tang. And I saw that. And then also I came across the dive belts that Jacques Cousteau had used, which also had the same things, had this slot and tang setup, obviously much bigger. And that's really what inspired me. And I thought, this is it. I can take that dive belt and I can downsize. I can make it into a watch strap. And that's exactly what I did. And I found I'd been working with kind of like the sheet metal being laser cut and then formed and making my belt buckles out of that. I think, okay, let's go down to 1.5 mil and let's make watch strap buckles. Okay. So the first was the elastic one, and I was hand sewing those, put them together, and just thought, wow, this is a product. It's working for me. So the elastic were the first ones that I did. On from there would be the O-rigs.
Yep.
So you've got an O-rig, hey?
Yes.
Calypso O-rig, okay.
Yeah.
And the term Calypso, I've taken again, it's that there's a certain era. It was like the 1950s, 60s, 70s, around those time when there was a lot of really great design, I suppose, mid-century modern and all that sort of thing. There's some really nice design that really caught my attention, and it works with like vintage watches, it works with tour watches. So that was a big inspiration. Mm-hmm. So the Calypso is obviously relating back to Jacques Cousteau and his little mini sub, and I kind of brought some of those influences into the design and the look and the feel and the dive belt and all that. So I'm trying to echo those things in my products so that you get the look and the feel and the vibe from that era. So the O-rig was next, and there I was using a simple, normal, either 20 mil or 22 mil Zulu ring.
Yeah.
And then creating a little sheet metal frame for the buckle, pairing these two together and getting a cinch down strap. Mm-hmm. Right. So that was then, so now we've got a static strap, we've got an elastic strap, we've got a static strap and something that can be cinched down, infinitely adjustable. The challenge with this one was the keeper. I was either going to go with a cloth keeper, which is quite labor intensive to make, or come up with something new. And again, I kind of like racked my brains for a long time. And then I came up with what I call the captive keeper, which is using a Zulu ring and then an adjustable kind of sliding tri-glide.
Yeah.
To basically work as a keeper on the straps, and super proud of that. That was like, I really worked hard to come up with that idea. So they've got those parts on them, all 316 stainless and really solid. I swim twice a week, do lane swimming and what have you with these watches. I swim with the elastic straps. I swim with the static straps, and they're rock solid. So that was that. And the elastics, I got back into the elastics now. I've come up with another new strap, which is the grapple band, which is a hook strap. So when I started making belts, I came up with a belt called the grapple belt, and it's been my bestseller for 6 years. And I always wanted to make an elastic strap with this hook system. But the big problem for me was the elastic is going to like wear. If you slotting a hook buckle through that thing every day, it's not going to last, you know, and that's important to me that it does last. So then when I kind of came up with the idea for the Cordura laminate, I realized, I can use this to hook the buckle into, and this thing is going to be solid. It's going to last. It's, you know, be really durable. And that's a brand new thing that I've come out with a matter of weeks ago, and they're going well. I think it's my current favorite.
They look really comfortable as well, because like you said, they're elastic, they got a low profile to them. And it's interesting that you bring up, obviously, the fact that you could have, you know, in theory, you know, if you hadn't had all this R&D and, you know, this experience with buckles and materials, you could have been, you know, just gone and effectively, you know, to a lame sonar loop in the elastic and just had the buckle feed into a loop in the elastic. And obviously, like you said, your concern there is it would fray and eventually the elastic would go out. And then obviously that's a strap would eventually just be defunct, right? Wouldn't work. And it's interesting that obviously that you said that you've used Cordura tabs on the end, obviously to aid in rigidity and longevity of that system. The only other place that I have ever seen those hook buckles used before in my professional career is on the back of camera harnesses. On the back of camera harnesses for a particular company called Black Rapid, they make camera harnesses, so slings, so single point slings and stuff like that for a single camera. And then you can also get a double one, which is a harness, and it kind of goes on, I guess similar to how you could imagine, like, you know, a concealed carry underslung, you know, pistol holsters would go.
Yeah.
And it goes on, obviously, round the back and it crosses over. But what's interesting is that the Black Rapid ones are really good. And the fact that you buy a double, you can actually split them and turn them into two singles, dependent on, you know, if you wanted to just use one camera for the day. And because they're ambidextrous, you know, it, you know, left and right hand sides, the way that they fit together at the front is a clip, obviously, for you to put it on. But on the back, it's one of those hook buckles that hooks into it. And funny enough, as you said, it doesn't hook into elastic. It hooks into hard-wearing Cordura laser laminate. So it's the only other place that I'd ever seen it. Okay. And when I saw it posted a few weeks ago, when you obviously started pushing those out, I was like, that's really interesting. I would never have thought to have used that as a watch strap, because the only other place I've ever seen it before was on the back of a camera harness.
See, the beauty of this whole thing is that you see something, it's being used for something else, you repurpose it, and out of that you can create a brand new product. And that I find very rewarding to be able to do that. And it might be from the military, it could be from diving, could be from cameras. Is there I don't know how many more inventions that there are going to be in the world, because just about everything's been done. But But innovation, I think, is the key, is to look and to look differently at things and see possibility. And that's what I try to do. And I think this the whole Cordura laminate thing has opened up a lot of opportunities for me to explore these things and to do new stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And also the other benefit of Cordura laser laminate, you know, materials and stuff. So, I mean, I look at it from a military perspective, pouches, bags, patches, other stuff like that, all are now made of laser laminate, because it's hard wearing, a laser is very accurate, so you can always get the same dimensions of whatever you are lasering in that material. You know, the only difference is the color in which, you know, where it's printed or designed. And then, like you said, you know, it's hard wearing. For us in a military perspective, it's not, obviously it doesn't absorb water, you know, and that's obviously another benefit as well, you know. So quick drying, doesn't absorb water. It's machined as it or produced, like you said, to such exacting tolerances that you know every single time that you pull out a Kadura laser laminate end piece for a 22 mil watch strap, it's always going to be the tolerance of a 22 mil watch lug, you know. And I think it's that consistency as well, which obviously is a back goes back into for yourself, I would say, then your attention to detail, your pride in your own work, and giving the customer or client a very well-made, long-lasting product. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And the point you're making about accuracy is really important, because, you know, if I do a 20 mil strap and I do a 22 mil strap, I get, you know, people will have a 21 mil, you know, lug, and they'll say, which one should I choose, 20 or 22? And we're talking millimeters. Mm-hmm. It needs to be 21. Yes. That's the thing. And it's the same with the buckles. My buckles are accurate to a tenth of a millimeter, mm-hmm. because if it, that much can affect how well the buckle works.
Well, of course, yeah.
And it's really interesting, because I found that on the belts, I mean the grapple belt. I mean, I'm on my sixth iteration of that buckle. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at how, you know, them being sturdy and holding the webbing the way it should, not slipping and the belt coming loose and that sort of thing. All these things you learn as you go along. And like I said, I've taken the knowledge from the belts and put it into the watch straps. And I think it's worked well.
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely. And I've talked about, you know, tolerances and the fact that you're working in millimeters, you know, go back to watches and a bit more of a satirical point here. You know, does it annoy you when you see the old, so the screenshots from Dr. No and James Bond is there, Sean Connery is there, and he, you know, the screenshot is the Rolex Submariner on his wrist, the lighter next to it to tell the time, and he's got a 16 mil NATO strap on a 20 mil watch.
I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen it?
Yeah. It's amazing. You just see that little gap and you see that spring bar. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just off-putting, isn't it? So
I'll send you the screenshot later after we finish recording so you can see it. But also what's really funny is that for a long time, and it continues to this day, the British military issue all the watches still on 18 mil straps, despite the fact that the watches have 20 mil lugs.
Oh, really?
Because the British, obviously the Ministry of Defence, are very much a, you know, an animal of habit. You know, it's if yes. It isn't broken, don't fix it. So the contracts are still there. We still get watches on 18 mil reg, or 18 mil NATO straps. And what's really funny is that the regimental NATOs that you see around the place when people decide that they're going to wear their regimental colours on their issued watches are still also made in 18 mil nylon. So it's really funny. You'll always have a 1 or 2 mil gap on an issued watch with these regimental colours on, which is quite funny. Clearly, that doesn't happen with the Hawkrigger, so you don't have to worry about having a gap, guys.
Not a chance.
In terms of your two-piece straps as well, were they were a later iteration, weren't they? Because
they are, yeah. And I've been really busy, and I'm wanting to actually expand the range of two-piece straps to everything. I just got to get there. So I want to do a grapple band in a two-piece, and I want to take all my not so much the classic O-rigs, but all the other O-rigs, the mil-spec ones. I want to make them all available in every color and every type in two-piece, because they're a great product and super comfortable, and they solve a lot of problems.
Yeah. In terms of your materials now, I'm not going to go into like loads of detail, because I know that, you know, there's certain things that you guys, as your independent makers, will keep close to your chests in general. But you talk about your buckles being, you know, to that, you know, a tenth of a millimeter. You talk about your laser laminate end pieces to be, you know, certain colors, and, you know, you clearly order them to your own specification. I assume your webbing is also to your own specification. Is this a part of the process that people don't see, where you as a independent business now have to go and forge relations with other, you know, industries to have your buckles made, to have your nylon made, to have your Cordura laminate made to your specifications? Or is these things that you are these things done in-house, as it were?
Firstly, just about everything's bespoke. Mm-hmm. because you can't in the UK just go out there and get 22 millimeter webbing.
No.
Because nobody's making it, you know. Mm-hmm. Or hardly anybody's making it. So you've got to look wider for mm-hmm. things like that. My rib webbing is more generic. My flat kind of mil-spec-ish webbing is bespoke.
Yeah.
I get that from overseas. The yeah. Cordura laminated is made in the USA. It's laser cut in the UK.
Yeah.
So that's done locally. The buckles mm-hmm. are made in the UK, in Yorkshire. And yes, you build these relationships. You find good people who deliver, and they've got a good quality control and good relationships. You build relationships with these people. That might the guy that does my buckles. He, I do the drawings.
Yes.
I learned that myself, because when I started out initially, it was like £400 a drawing, you know?
Yes.
So I learned quickly to do it myself. So I've designed everything myself now. And then I send the drawings out to my laser guy. He cuts them out and he sends them back rough to me. And as I've grown, I've taken more and more in-house. So currently I get the rough cut, laser cut, kind of, outlines mm-hmm. of buckles, and then I rumble them, so to deburr them, and then to polish them, give them whatever finish I want to have, whether I want to have a stone wash finish or a satin finish or a polished mm-hmm. finish. I do that, and then I've got a press where I've had tooling made yep. to get the right kind of arc on the buckles, and that was also a learning curve. I've been through about I think three different radiuses until I found the radius that's going to work well on the wrist and sit nicely and work well with the other parts for cinching down and all that sort of thing. So all of that is happening. And then also I'm hand stamping the logo into them. So the buckles, basically, they've just been laser cut. I'm doing everything else. And then obviously putting the straps together, that's me too.
Really in-depth single man operation then is what you're getting at.
Yeah, cottage industry.
Definitely, yeah. Obviously, moving away from your materials now, obviously, the final thing we talk about clearly is, you know, going back to your iterations now, you've clearly put your straps and your belts through testing, be that personally with your own stuff and what you like to do, but clearly also with potential other people where, you know, other people would have not only bought and backed you by, you know, putting their money where their mouth is and buying from you because of your reputation and testing it and sending you photos and reviews back. But clearly you've also probably gone through a few test situations with each individual, for example, in this case, watch strap, where you brought out a new version and gone, right, go test this. You're a diver or you're a reviewer who's, you know, outdoors a lot, go test this and tell me what's good and what's bad. Your testing phase, how long does that part of your process take, or does it depend on each individual item?
Well, obviously I tested it on myself first. Mm-hmm. What I did with the belts initially, the idea of bigger belts, and they had to be strong and what have you. I looked at getting them tested for work at height and that sort of thing, but I decided yeah. not to go that route. Mm-hmm. So I would test them. I've actually got a 20 ton jack in the garage that I set up on a thing with a belt on, and I just cranked that thing to see how much this belt could take.
Yeah.
It couldn't break it. Mm-hmm. Couldn't bend the buckle, couldn't do anything, you know. So I put the belts through quite a lot of testing, and as I said, the watch straps are basically, it's the same mechanics.
Yes. It's just smaller,
scaled right down. So yeah, so mostly it's been me testing them out. I've got to feel myself. I'm happy with where I'm at, and I'm quite particular. And then yeah, I've had a few, like on Instagram, you make a lot of connections, a lot of friends on Instagram. I've really enjoyed my time on Instagram, and sometimes send them out to some of my friends that are friends that I've made on Instagram, also to other people who we call influencers. They've got a big followings, and they're really knowledgeable about watches. I've done that as well, and I just listen. I listen for the feedback, and try to learn as much as I can, to come up with with the best solutions, really.
I think as well, like you said, that helps feeding to that attention to detail, right? And may I think as well, the good thing with social media, and I found it as effectively now a watch content creator, be it with the photography, and clearly with physical watch creation now, where I've aided, projects being made for certain companies for certain trades within the military and all that kind of stuff. What I found was really interesting is, like you said, you have this, I call it my online empire as a bit of a joke, right? But like, you get this community, don't you, around you, like, that you formulate and you use it to the best of your advantage. And I think social media, particularly Instagram, for our stuff now, and I say our stuff, generic watches now, and I think EDC as well to an extent, is really good because you connect with people all the way around the world who have the same interests with you, and potentially, like you said, can help you out with certain things. I look at, so it went live today, as in the day that we're recording, guys. I had a review written about a watch that I managed to effectively get into a cockpit of a particular airplane, which is absolutely mental. And if it wasn't for my connections through watches and through life, my career, I wouldn't have been able to have that, And I think what's great, and like you said, as you've highlighted here, is the fact that we are, even though you're a, independent one man show effectively, where it's your idea and your constant iteration, your attention to detail, but it's also other people have not only backed you and gravitated towards you, but you're not afraid to go out to those people and say, actually, mate, I've got a new belt. Can you just test this? Because you have the ability to take this to an environment that I do not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I've got friends all over the place, but in America as well, people who've got military backgrounds, police backgrounds, that sort of thing. Got a lot. They've got a lot of my gear, and I listen carefully to what they've got to say. And the world's changed, and we all know that. And I think it's fantastic that we can have this much reach. It's like for a guy making watch stamps in a little village in the middle of Cornwall. It's without this, I wouldn't be selling to, Hawaii and America and Finland and everywhere else. It's they go all over the world, Australia. It's a great time for entrepreneurs and small businesses to give things a go. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity that's kind of presented itself through all of this.
And also the other side of it is, I think, as like you said, you are an independent maker. It must be really satisfying for you when you get an email back, and maybe a photo or a video back from a place that you probably didn't expect any of your items to ever end up with positive feedback, right? And there must be some really cool stories, personal stories now, where people have gone, I've taken your watch band to here, or I've taken your and worn your belt here. I do this over here. Here's a photo of what you made doing what I do.
Yeah, it's really nice. I mean, I sent some a watch strap out to Japan the other day, and I've never posted anything to Japan. Got lovely emails back. A husband and wife. The husband already had one of my straps, because I don't think that they're not from Japan, but they're obviously living there now. And a beautiful, just two hand shot of two people, a lady and a guy. You see from the hands that they were older. I think it was a Rolex and an Omega or whatever it was. And just with my watch strap on there, and it's quite touching to see that sort of thing. So yeah, it's always really nice. I've got a friend out in Australia that was a military diver, and actually a mercenary. He sent me a copy of his book the other day. I need to get into that. And somebody like that with that kind of background, and he's telling me, you know, he's loving my watch straps. They're real kind of like great, you know, on point for diving. Mm-hmm. For what his background has been. Yeah. And that's great. I mean, it really builds you up, and I need to always be, remember to always be all ears to listen to what people are saying and to keep learning.
Yeah, no, I like them. I like it. It must be, like I said, it just must be really rewarding when you get positive feedback, like you said, especially when it's from people who have had a very unique background, right? You know, and it's always cool, always cool. In terms of the future for Hawkrigger now, have you got anything in the works or any ideas that you're willing to share with the audience, or are you going to keep it all closed down? I know you mentioned earlier with the grapple bands, you're looking at potentially looking at a two-piece of the grapple band in future. But is there anything else other than new colorways and just constant iterations that you're considering?
It's funny, when I was on the podcast 8 weeks ago with Eric, he asked me the same question. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I've just introduced this, I've just introduced that. But I said I'm always looking, I'm always learning. And then a couple of weeks after that, I came up with the idea for the grapple band. Yeah. So I say the same to you as well. I've just introduced a grapple band. I'm in love with it. I think it's a fantastic watch strap, and I want to go. Yeah, I want to go two piece with that. I want to go two piece across the mil strap range of mine. I don't have any other bright ideas, but probably in 2 weeks' time I will do. So. What's nice about the small business and the fact that I do the design, I do the bulk of the manufacturing, is that I can turn around on a dime. I have an idea, and within a matter of a few weeks, it's a product, and it's out there and it's being sold. So I don't have this kind of 6 month, 1 year kind of strategy plan all figured out and kind of playing it by ear, but it's working. And the beauty is, I can be inspired by something. I can see a possibility, and I can just get to the design software, put something together, send it off to my guy in the laser cutters, and bang, it's there. You know, a couple of weeks later, I'm doing it. So, nice. So I'd say nothing forthcoming apart from different iterations of what I am doing. The grapple band is, I'm really happy with it. I'm actually in love with that watch strap at the minute. I think that's going to be a massive hit. They're already going out, and I'm really pleased.
Nice. Are you open to having a aesthetic suggestion now?
Absolutely, yeah.
From someone who owns one of your straps?
Yes.
DLC buckles.
Say again?
DLC buckles. Having the potential to give the option for those who are like that way inclined to match their buckles with the case colorings of their watches.
I love it. I've done it. I did the PVD a couple of years ago. It's just bloody expensive.
Yeah,
it's like the actual coating costs more than the actual buckle, you know what I'm saying? So I steered away from it. Plus, it's hard to find people to do it in the UK. There is one firm that did it for me. And yeah, I'm kind of teaching on the brink of doing it with the grapples, because they've got less hardware, which means I don't have to like pump the price up or anything like that. When you've got four pieces of hardware, so you've got the two O-rings, you've got the... and two, basically the keeper and then the buckle, the frame itself, and you get them all done, it pushes the price up. Like what I was doing, I was charging like £10 more, but I was making nothing on it, because otherwise it would be £20 more or whatever. Mm-hmm. So possibly with the grapple bands, I quite fancy the idea. Then I'm going to have to buy like a PVD watch for myself.
Oh yeah, you will do it. And I am more than happy, Stu, to suggest to you PVD watches of a true nature. I know a few people who make some really nice DLC/PVD watches of a tool watch nature, and I'm more than happy to send those links your way. That's not a problem.
Sounds good. You know what I love about them as well is when they start to wear a little.
Yes.
And it starts to get those kind of light spots. They look so good.
Yeah. Then you know that watch has done stuff. That's how I look at it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, no, I dig it.
That's cool. So yeah, in terms of Hawkrigger then, obviously we've spoken about, you know, what got you into watches. We've spoken about Hawkriggers as an overview, everything from your testing iterations, your material expertise, your design iterations, right through to obviously what is the potential future for Hawkrigger. So where can people engage with you? Where can people find you? Where can people speak to you about orders? You know, all of that kind of stuff. Because clearly, I'm just going to throw it all into the show notes and share it in my stories and obviously help get people to come speak to you directly, you know. But where can people find you?
Okay, first up, I'd say is Instagram. Mm-hmm. I'm available on Instagram for private messaging and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm posting pretty much daily or every second day.
Yep.
So anything that's up and coming, there's going to be sneak peeks on Instagram. I chat with everybody on there. We've got a great community that I'm glad to be a part of, the whole kind of watch scene and the EDC scene and all of this. Yep. It's like it's a great kind of camaraderie and a chit chat and that sort of thing. I enjoy it and sharing what we're doing. So Instagram, it would be Hawkrigger Gear on Instagram.
Yep.
My website is hawkrigger.com. And I've got everything on there. For Europe, I'm on Etsy, Hawkrigger Store on Etsy, and I'm trying to put the store with all the straps. I've got more on my website. I do all of Europe through Etsy now because of the whole Brexit thing and the tax, and they want me to collect tax from people in Finland. I'm just not up for that. So Etsy does all of that. So Europe, I'm on, is Etsy. The rest of the world is hawkrigger.com, and everything that I'm doing current and all the activities happening on Instagram.
Fantastic. Awesome. Right, guys, as you know, clearly it's all going to be in the show notes. If you are, you know, haven't been following on and you've been scrolling through Instagram or on the internet as you've been listening to the podcast, please go support Stu, reach out to him, message him. He will talk to you about everything Hawkrigger and even probably give you his personal take on owning you know, Unimatics and Tudor FXDs and all that other kind of good stuff. But yeah, please go and speak to Stu direct. Stu, before we wrap up this episode and move on to the closing notes, is there anything that you feel that we've missed about yourself or Hawkrigger before we move on to the closing notes?
No, I think it's been really good. I think I love the way you kind of give you questions and all of that, and I can tell that you're really passionate, Dan, about this as well, because just through the questions, you've got a real interest in what I do and how I put these things together. So thanks very much for that. No, I'm happy. I think it's been a great experience chatting about these things and getting the word out and letting everybody know what I'm doing and what I hope to do. So thanks for that.
Not a problem. You've been a fantastic guest, Stu. You know, the Zulu Time podcast, such timely moments. You know, we/I, as it were. I mean, it is sometimes a week, because obviously I have joint hosts on the podcast. But, you know, everyone who has come on to my show have always been about supporting the independent and supporting, about, you know, the end, not also the end user, supporting, you know, the business, as it were, and all that kind of stuff, and forging these relationships online across the watch fam, watch community, as it were, or however you want to refer to that, because I think it's important. So thank you for giving up your time as well to come and allow me to interview you for my podcast. Moving on to the closing notes now. Now, this, guys, is quite funny. So this shows you how studious Stu is, guys. So we were going through the admin pre-recording, and I was like, right, have you got your closing note? And in the direct messages, obviously, me and Stu have been, you know, sharing back and forth over the last couple of weeks before, obviously, recording. I basically highlighted, guys, what a closing note was, and I gave him some examples. Stu was so studious, he came up with at least four closing notes of each category. So we don't need to go through all of your categories, Stu, despite the fact that obviously the ones that we spoke about are very interesting and very down the route of the audience. But please just select maybe your top two closing notes for the audience today.
Okay, so a film. I would say there's a movie, it's I think it came out in 1997, called The Edge. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, no.
You should watch it. It's with my top actor, Anthony Hopkins, mm-hmm. And Alec Baldwin. And it's a story about character. It's a story about strength of character versus weakness of character. And mm-hmm. It's an action movie, but it's very gripping. And it's about a multimillionaire called Charles, who goes away on a photo shoot with his much younger supermodel girlfriend or wife, I think wife. And the photographer is secretly having an affair with his wife, but they get stranded in the Alaskan kind of wilderness when the plane crashes and they go off on a little fishing trip. Right. So Charles finds himself with the photographer, Robert, in a survival situation, being hunted by a grizzly bear.
Okay. Not ideal.
But this is a brilliant movie, and it's all about how somebody with strength of character, because Charles is now an older guy, survives, and just the goodness of this guy. Mm-hmm. Basically, from being there's a point in the movie where he says, "Never feel sorry for a man with a plane." Okay, mm-hmm. Which is a good quote. There's a lot of good quotes in it. Yeah. But yeah, it's all about strength of character versus. The Robert character is less savory, but the interaction they have through this stressful situation makes for a fantastic show. So yeah, you should watch that one. That's a great movie.
I'd also like to just caveat that not all photographers are knobheads. I just want to throw that out there, guys. Not all photographers are knobheads. All right, yeah. That one maybe. But yes, now I'll put it in the show notes and I'll also get around to watching it at some point, I'm sure. So my closing note, guys, for this episode is a Netflix one. So I've recently finished a TV series that's been launched on there, and it's called The Fall of the House of Usher. So those who've been following, obviously in UK, it's in like the top 10 at the moment of TV series on Netflix, but it's effectively a modernization and screen adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's kind of short stories and stuff like that. So one episode is literally called The Raven, which is a very famous, obviously, Edgar Allan Poe short story. Another is called The Pit and the Pendulum, which I remember studying at school during GCSE English and all that kind of stuff. So if you want to effectively see a modernization screen adaptation of the world of Edgar Allan Poe, go watch it. And, you know, if you're into the books, obviously, you know, clearly there'll be links and references of the original, writings of Edgar Allan Poe all the way through it. And you can go and have a look at it. But I like how it's filmed. So a particular episode, as I've just mentioned, it was The Pit and the Pendulum. There's a really good, like, screen adaptations of how they put the foreboding of this pendulum into the episode, right? So, like, the first opening scene is... a very like 1980s art deco cat clock, right? And it's a cat on the wall and its tail is the pendulum, and it's just this cat and the time going, and it's obviously it's all about bringing in this foreboding. And obviously it you know, it goes all the way through the episode right up to obviously the crescendo at the end, which I'm not going to ruin for you if you've not seen it. And you know, and those who have read the story originally, be it in a GCSE English or school, will know how that ends. And it's obviously a Allan Poe story, so it's not a very nice ending, but you know, that's the, you know, the remit of the series. So if you're into that, go and have a look. But it is also on, like I said, it's on Netflix's top 10, so clearly it's quite popular at the moment. So that's my closing note. Stu, thank you so much, mate, for giving up your time to speak to me today on Zulu Time Podcast. I'm sure we'll have many more interactions over the course of 2024, because by the time this episode airs, we're pretty much looking to wrap up 2023 for the Zulu Time Podcast. But yeah, you know, I wish you all the best moving into 2024. I look forward to the new iterations of all your products, you know, and I also look forward to taking delivery of a couple more strap orders that I've put in with yourself. One strap particular is going out as a Christmas present, just so you're aware, and a little bit of a teaser to the potential listener for them, you know, that they're going to get something pretty cool and made by a very passionate independent maker, effectively. But yeah, guys, look forward to my next episode where we're going to look forward look at the Christmas roundup episode. So as you know, we'll summarize 2023 in terms of watch releases, and we'll give you some Christmas gift ideas, and then we'll also look at our hopes and aspirations for 2024. Going back to the beginning of the episode, Stu, I will stand by it. Smaller watches will come back in as of 2024, and 18 mil watch straps may or may not be a part of that.
Sounds good, yes. Dan, thank you so much, eh?
No worries, mate. Right, guys, until then, guys, stay safe, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.